toenail. You can't polish my chrome so clean. We can't fly off into the sunset together. A rusty old American dream. Still running, a rusty old American dream.
Get those car care questions ready for Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive, who just happens to be, surprise, surprise, in studio with me. Boy, Nick, thanks for coming down.
Absolutely. I'm not sure when's the last time I've been down here, but I found my way. I remembered the way.
It has been a few years, thanks to COVID. But it's great to see you. It was a surprise I had not, and our friend Patrick Selzner brought you down, or at least invited you down here. I don't think he didn't show for you here. But
no, he did not.
But anyway,
he invited me, and I was happy to come.
Well, Nick Stoffel runs a place called Lloyd's Automotive in the St. Paul and Grand Avenue. And I was just there with Tony getting oil changed last week. Now, a couple of other places that we mention from time to time are located where? Because if you're not busy enough with Lloyd's, you've got two other places.
Yes, we do. So as you know, we've had Lloyd's Automotive, which I've worked at since we were just discussing, 1998. So it's been a long run. We acquired Parkway Auto Care on the corner at Ford Parkway and Snelling back in 2022, I believe. And then just this past fall, we acquired our third shop, which is called Longfellow Automotive, which is right in the Longfellow neighborhood. So we are figuring out what we're trying to do here when we grow up, but we're trying.
Well, is it one of those things, be careful what you wish because you just might get it?
Very true. There's a much larger learning curve than we anticipated. But as you know, we have great people and great customers, and that makes the days fly by.
And people get their cars fixed. You guys are busy.
We are very busy, and this heat this past week is definitely, as we call it, turn the faucet on. So we're scheduling a ways out. So if someone needs work at any shop, for that matter, they're all filling up quickly. So if you're planning on a road trip here soon, get on somebody's schedule before you're left out in the cold.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you can call us or text us with any kind of a car care question you may have. And keep in mind, we always like to say, too, that Nick will be with us till just about 7:45. And our time goes by so quickly. So by all means, any car care question, call it in or text it in. Ryan, what's the phone? What's the text and the phone number? I want to see if you remember.
651-461-9226. I'm paying attention
I was just testing you. All right, very good. Yeah, do call or text, like we say, sooner rather than later. What has changed is since you started the business? So back up a little bit, because you were a kid, really, working for Dan, right?
I was. I started at the filling station or service station. If you remember those, we had full drive and or full service, and we had to check oil on the drive and top off fluids. And there was an Amoco station in St. Paul on Edgecombe and Randolph on the corner there that I started when I was still 15 years old. I think it was April that year. And worked through high school, and I said to myself after that, I said, well, I don't want to work in this car business the rest of my life. So as you know, I joined the Marine Corps, and then I got out of the Marine Corps and kept in touch with Dan, and he said, well, you're probably a pretty good janitor. So I started cleaning floors at Lloyd's back in 1998, and the rest is history. You know, it was a long time.
What do you think you would have done had you not gotten involved with Dan and Lloyd's?
I have no idea. Probably wouldn't be here, I can tell you that.
Yeah. Well, it certainly served you well, and still is. What was the toughest job you've ever had to do as a technician? Do you recall?
I think my toughest job is being a dad. But
yeah, for sure.
I don't know. The cars have changed so much, and they've evolved. They get better each year. I know there's a lot of frustrations, concerns, the unknown, I suppose. People talk about electric cars and hybrid, and they don't understand them, so it's frightening. But those technologies are great. They're going to help us going forward, and the next technologies. You never know how these things are going to evolve. When I started back at the gas station, for that matter, we were still working on carbureted vehicles, and then with fuel injection, electronic ignition. Now we have all these safety systems in the vehicles, so it's exciting to see what's coming down the road, and we'll be ready because we always train our guys and we do what we can to keep on top of things.
You and I talked in recent shows about carbureted cars. Do you ever see, and you don't work on those as a rule.
No, we don't. That's It's a science. You know, it used to be just the norm. Now the guys that can, or the folks that can tune those and adjust those are far and few between. So we stay out of it because we just don't have the know-how. You know, we don't do it every day, and we kind of fumble our way through it at best. So, you know, the carbureted cars, drum brakes, there's a lot of those things that have just evolved and changed. You know, everything's electronically controlled. You know, transmissions are different. You know, and the truth is, it's better in the sense that, like, the maintenance. We always talk about maintenance and fluid services and such. And when I started, we were changing coolant, like, every other year. Now, as we talk about, it could be 100,000 miles. Same with spark plugs. So I think cars have gotten better, much more reliable, as long as we do our part and maintain them.
651-461-9226. You have any kind of a car question? Maybe you always wanted to talk to an auto mechanic, a technician, about whatever the case. Any question. Call us, text us. Nick, as I said, will be with us till just about 7:45 this morning. What about we get texts about this transmission fluid, and I wanted to ask you about the well, I know the difference, but there's a flush, and then I've read about some filters. Are there filters or gaskets? Well, what's the deal?
Before that, I want to know how Ryan's trip went down to Iowa last week.
Yes.
He's here, folks, so he made it back.
It was just fine. I was driving as if the wheels were going to fall off at any moment, and, you know, the car was about to explode. So I took it a little easy in the right lane, and it was fine. Didn't have any issues, and it's out of my hands now. The lady friend's parents are going to sell it, hopefully. And it's out of my garage, so I'm a happy camper, Nick.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm glad you made it back. Yes. I thought about you when we were fishing. I'm like, I hope it's not that bad.
It was fine.
Yeah, you wanted to hear the end of the story, for sure. I'm glad it was happy.
Ending. Made it to Iowa in 3 hours. It was no issue, man, no issue. But thank you for the wise counsel.
Yeah. not that you listen, but nor do any of us, I guess. Just crank the radio and it'll go away,
yeah,
right?
You know, I kept it low. I took your advice. Even though there was a good Leonard Skinner song on, I was like, okay, well, got to keep listening here.
651-461-9226. Any kind of a car care question you may have. What about transmission? You were talking about 100,000 miles for plugs. Or what about transmission fluid?
So transmission fluid services have definitely evolved. I would say it was the normal, you know, years ago. We'd pull the pan, clean all that debris off the little magnet in the bottom of the pan. There'd be a screen or filter you'd replace, reinstall the pan with a new gasket and top up the fluid. Maybe 5-6 quarts of fluid. A lot of times the capacity might be 10 or 12 because, you know, there's a lot of different ports, the torque converter, areas where that fluid would not drain from. That evolved kind of into a flush where you'd connect a pump with a reservoir and we'd flush the fluid out and exchange it. More recently now, I'd say that the norm now would be a drain and fill where there's a drain plug and a fill plug. And you're doing that maybe a little more often. But it's not as costly because it's not as much fluid. So it still might be, you know, 50, 60, depending on the vehicle. Some might even say, I don't agree with this, lifetime fill, because that makes me more worried, to be honest. But I would say that they've evolved. The fluids are much better, more refined. Costs are going up with the price of oil, obviously. But I would say that they've changed for the better. The maintenance, as long as we do it, these vehicles should last hundreds of thousands of miles.
Yeah. And we kind of tend to take it for granted. That we just leave it in the garage or wherever we park the car, we get out, go to work, whatever, and we start it and don't really think about it.
No, we don't. Our lives are so full. My life, trying to run 3 businesses, running kids to hockey and baseball and softball and, you know, everything in between. And, you know, you get busy and you don't think of it. You expect you're going to hop out and turn the key, push the button, and you're going to be good to go. You do have to pause every so often, take it in, have it serviced. Often it costs much more to repair a vehicle than maintain a vehicle. So yeah. When a car breaks, you still have those maintenance items to do in addition to some sort of repair.
Yeah. So be proactive. Yeah. All right. I tell you what, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're getting a bunch of text questions. We'll have you field an answer. If you have any kind of a car care question, we'd love to hear from you on this Saturday. 651-461-9226. From Newstalk 830 WCCO. And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Car Care Show. Danny Long here in my final go-around with the good neighbor. And Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive is in studio with us. So it's great to see Nick in person and answering questions via our text and phone calls as well. Yeah, call us, text us at 651-461-9226. In fact, let's do this. Then I want to get Daughter Tina's question answered here. Where is the question? All right. What could cause a slight vibration in the steering wheel at speed above 70 had the tires rotated with regular maintenance 1,700 miles ago? The car has 160,000 miles on it. It's a 2014 Camry. What do you think?
Typically, if we have a vibration, we always want to think what's rotating. So it's, you know, the tires, the wheels, the brakes, wheel bearings, all those things at the four corners of the vehicle could create a vibration. The question is, how do we find that? The first thing we would do, they mentioned the tires rotated, rotate them back, see if it goes away. We can try balancing the tires, take a look at the runout on the hubs of the brake rotors themselves. Likely, though, it's going to be a tire balance issue, I suspect. You know, get the tire pressures adjusted, move those tires around to different positions or different corners, and I suspect that that vibration will not go away, but at least change.
For those just joining us, excuse me, on my final day here in CCO, my daughter Tina and my son Tony is here. Daughter Angie, your sister's listening at home. She's probably taking care of some other kids. A busy day. Tina, I wanted you to mention to Nick. Well, Nick knows about that, but I still have the picture you you took of your vehicle with the hood open and what damage a critter did. Pull that mic over there and tell us and Nick exactly what happened.
Okay, so a red squirrel must have taken all the walnuts from the black walnut tree next door and put them all in my 2019 RAV4's engine. There's lots of different compartments underneath there.
It's called nesting. They were nesting in your car.
And they built a nest too. So, yeah, that was I took a picture. Like, I think it was a 40-gallon container that was taken out.
What did they put in there? They're kind of like acorns and things like that, or whatever it was.
Black walnuts.
Oh, black walnuts.
You know, we had an incident with a customer that actually had a business right on Grand, kind of kitty corner from us, and she'd parked back on the alley side. And she came in one morning just frantic because there's all this noise under the hood and the squirrels had nested under her hood. And we cleaned it all out and, you know, she was quite upset and fine. Come back 2 days later, the same thing happened. Like, I'm like, you need to park somewhere else. Like, they had marked that territory. That was their home and they were coming back. So we cleaned it out, degreased to try to get rid of anything that would draw them back. Told her not to park in the same spot in the lot and, you know, it eventually went away. But that's, they can create quite a bit of damage, and the nesting. You know, I don't know how much damage, like from like the walnuts and all that, the debris. It's more when they get into the wiring and the hoses, and they start, you know, eating or trying to create a bigger problem there. But it can be a little frightening, that's for sure.
Now, Nick, have you or your technicians found debris or critters in the cabin filter area of a car?
Yeah, you know, that especially in the fall season, we'll see more of that as things are starting to nest and find a warm place. That's why, you know, back to maintenance, if you have your vehicle service, have them inspect that cabin filter, any of that debris, and then there'll be some signs or warnings if there's any other critters trying to find their way through. Typically, if they're outside the vehicle, so be it, but they make their way into that air duct, that cabin filter is kind of your last line of defense before they're inside the vehicle. So if there's any holes in that, then we have to look a little bit deeper to see if there's any other signs of nesting throughout the car itself.
You know, we talk a lot on this show, Nick, as you know, about things like transmission or, you know, spark plugs, things like that. But this texter wants to know, do you use a paste or liquid wax on your vehicles? Is there a quality difference? Now, how often do you, be honest now.
As we know, the expert on waxing your vehicle would be who? It'd be Denny. Denny even clay bars his vehicle. If you know what that is, Denny and Dan Burns are the two people I know that will hand wash and wax their vehicle way more often than would ever be needed.
Yeah, the clay barring is definitely a labor of love. I like, actually, they've come out with a lot of, in my opinion, some good liquid wax. I still like a paste wax, especially the newer ones that have kind of a ceramic touch to them.
You like the Karate Kid, wax on, wax off.
Yeah, right.
I go through the machine that does it for me.
Yeah, but again, I prefer paste, but hey, you know. That's what makes horse races again. They make some really good liquid wax as well, too. Just get a good brand name, and you're good to go. We have a phone call, Ryan. We do. Hank calling in from Hudson. Hank, good morning. Hello, are you there?
12.
I'm sorry, you're cutting out.
I am.
There, now you're good.
Okay. I have a question about, I have a 2012 Jeep Liberty Jet with a tow package, and I have a small travel trailer I bought, just got it. Are the brakes in that vehicle adequate to be slowing that 21-foot trailer that's less than 5,000 pounds, and the tongue weight is about 300 pounds, and I got a Class 3 hitch on there, but I'm wondering about, I haven't pulled it yet, but I'm wondering about if the brakes on that Jeep are adequate to be slowing that much weight down out on the road.
You know, to be honest, trailers and all that weight always make me a little bit nervous. If you yourself, you know, as much as the vehicle, how comfortable are you? Obviously, give yourself more space, more time. You're coming down that hill out of Hudson, give yourself a lot of space and time. That's a lot of weight that's pushing the vehicle also. So it's more of a control issue. It's a short wheelbase. You know, I'm not going to tell you yes or no, to be honest. I would just say I'd be very cautious. I know that these vehicles will tell you in the owner's manuals a capacity or weight limit that the vehicle has the capacity to. I always think that's a little generous. I would always, you know, if it says the 5,000, 3,000, you're well within the transmission's capacity and the vehicle itself. Just make sure you're comfortable yourself doing it. And the brakes, you know, give it time. You don't want them heating up. If you're trying to stop on a quick dime here, you're going to overheat those brakes, warp those rotors, and now you need to have a brake repair done because of that. And that trailer will add that extra weight and extra heat because it's pushing you forward.
All right. Good luck. Thanks, Hank. Appreciate it. 651-461-9226. Any kind of a car care question that's on your mind this morning for Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive. I was going to ask you, like I always like to do, for those that maybe want to pop into Lloyd's or one of the other places, how do we get in touch with the easiest way?
Well, as always, you can call, and as you know, Denny, we'll answer your questions. You don't have to bring your car to us. You don't have to drive all the way across town. There's a lot of really good shops and dealerships in your neighborhood that you should frequent and get service done with them. If you have a question, though, you can call us. You can reach us at 651-228-1316. If you're in St. Paul, you'll find us on the corner of Grand and Chatsworth, which is two blocks east of Lexington Parkway. And for more information, you can look at our website, which is lloydsautomotive.net.
And we'll get you that info before Nick takes his leave, which is about 7:45 this morning, making way for Ted Farrell's Wine Chat. Okay, let's do this. We've got more texts coming in here, and then we're going to take a break for weather. But let's do this. 2010 Chevy Equinox. Texter says, I've got an oil center problem, so a mechanic suggested I use 1040 motor oil. I've been running that now for 2 years. And it's good, but I'm wondering, should I go back to 530 motor oil, which is the suggested motor oil the Equinox should be running? Will that start the oil sender problem again, do you think?
Well, the oil sender is just a sensor that's reading the pressure, so I'm not sure why they would recommend it. I think maybe what they're saying is that the oil pressure is low. Maybe there's some wear and tear there. Not enough information there. I usually would advise people not to change from the oil weight that the manufacturer recommended. If we're trying to fix something, we should fix it, not try to band-aid it with something else. Obviously, there's going to be exceptions to that, but I would probably advise you stick to what was in the vehicle. You made a change. It seems to be working fine. If it's working fine, I probably wouldn't change back, to be honest. I don't know all the information.
All right. Very good. Nick, hang on, please. We'll take a break for weather and be right back with more of our Car Care Show. You have a question for Nick, by all means, call it in or text it in, 651-461-9226. This is 830 WCCO.
Now, the latest conditions and the outlook for the next few days with your CCO forecast.
We got a cloudy day today, high near 83. We dropped to 59 overnight. How about Sunday? 20% chance of showers after 1, otherwise high near 82. Monday, a chance of showers with daytime highs about 84 or so. Tuesday, sunny, 86. Wednesday, 30% chance of showers, again near 86. Come Thursday, showers and thunderstorms are likely, they say, 84 the high then. And by the end of the week, sunshine with a chance of showers, high near 82 on Friday. Right now, the winds are east at 9. We have a dew point 53. 59% is the humidity. Still overcast. CCO temp, 68 degrees. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show. Denny Long with Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive. On Nick will be here, but my last show is today. Thanks for all the wonderful comments we're getting here via the text line. It's much appreciated. In the meantime, back to the show. Mark is calling in, I believe, from Navarre. Thank you, Mark. What is your question?
Well, actually, I just wanted to do a follow-up to that fellow that just called about towing a trailer with his Jeep. I didn't catch what he was towing. Do you remember what he was towing?
I thought he mentioned like a utility trailer or a...
Oh, it was just okay. I was wondering if it was a you know, like a camper trailer or something like that. Those would have
no. Range. It was a utility type trailer.
Yeah, he said it was 3,000-pound trailer. So I don't think it was anything equipped with electric brakes. Which I'm assuming that's where your head is. If it's equipped with brakes, you should. If the trailer itself is equipped with brakes, you should only tow it with a vehicle that can support that. You should not overload your vehicle because that would potentially create some damage.
Right. I think you said it was a 5,000, by the way. And then the other thing I was going to mention is that you were talking about, you know, going down hills and such. And, you know, like with my truck and most cars, and that Jeep would have it too, is a manual transmission where you could drop that down into manual and then use your transmission to slide you down the hill, you know, without having to ride your brake.
Yeah, you could definitely downshift, use the engine transmission. You know, my concern is always if people aren't trying to focus on staying on the road and not comfortable pulling a trailer, especially if you have that sensation. I mean, I'm sure you've experienced where it's kind of pushing you. That could be a little nerve-wracking. So I just would caution that anybody pulling a trailer, make sure you're experienced and have the know-how and understanding what's happening behind you so you can keep your vehicle on the road.
Yeah, sure. And you can still apply the brakes well, but that would save a lot of wear and tear on his brakes if we kind of use them together, as it were.
All right, good tips. Mark, thank you. Appreciate the call in. We got another call. Is Jim on the line there from A Township? Hi, Jim. Good morning. What is your question for Nick?
Oh, I have a 2011 Ford F-150 pickup truck. My cousin, who was a mechanic, tells me with a 5.4 engine, when you go to replace the plugs, a lot of times they're frozen into place and you have to replace the whole head. Have you had that problem, Nick?
There was a vintage, and I'm not going to give you the exact years, I don't recall, but there was a vintage where the spark plugs were a bit of a challenge to get out of the cylinder head there. In the heyday of that, we got pretty good at it, and we have a couple of our guys that were able to remove those spark plugs without breaking them and without damaging the cylinder head. So there are folks out there. Make sure when you... make an appointment if you have a vehicle that needs that you talk to them about that specifically. You don't want somebody that hasn't done that, and you know, the guys that have been around for a while have for sure, because there's a few tricks for them to get those spark plugs out without creating more damage. So just make sure you mention that part of it when you make your appointment.
Is that also a problem with the 5.0?
No, it was. I don't remember the exact years, but it was on the 5.4. It was a few years. It was a window of 3-4 years. And like I said, you make the appointment, you inquire, they will know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. A lot of calls this morning. Appreciate that. Mike is next, calling in from Plymouth. Thanks for waiting, Mike. What is your question?
Yeah, hi. Hey, great listening to you over the years, Denny, and just wanted to say appreciate you. So good luck in your next chapter.
Thank you so much.
Yep, and just a quick question. I got a 2017 Chevy Silverado. It's an LTZ. And my dash is acting strange, or has been acting strange. Every once in a while, I'll hear a clicking, like what you hear when you hit a button on the dash. It's got that electronic clicking sound to confirm that you've pressed a button. I'll hear that sound, and sometimes my screen will change. And then I have the tow. I do have the trailer brakes on this vehicle. And in the dash display where the speedometer is, it'll say trailer brakes, and it'll come up intermittently sometimes. Like yesterday, it was really hot. I got in the car, and I hear the ding, 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 ding. I look down, and I see trailer brakes, and I'm not towing anything. I'm just driving. And that happened intermittently for a few minutes, and then it kind of went away. So just some really weird stuff going on with my dash, and I'm wondering what that might be.
Well, you know, I always start with the basics. You know, we'd gain access to the computer, see if there's any fault codes. You know, maybe there's a sensor that's not reading correctly or a connection that's bad. We have a voltage code. So we would start getting fault codes. Once we have a little more information, get out the wiring diagram and start checking powers and grounds. At some point, we're going to find either a break in a wire or something loose or damaged, and hopefully that's the problem. So I would say the first thing for you as the owner of the vehicle, document all this stuff. Make down, hey, it was hot. This warning was on, this situation, I hit a bump. Any information you can write down to help helps the shop, the mechanic, get to the bottom of that much quicker. So get a little journal, make a bunch of notes, get on somebody's schedule, take it in, go through those notes with them so they can try to duplicate what you're experiencing and get to the bottom of what's going on.
Very good. Thanks, Mike, for the call and the comments. Appreciate it so much. Texter says this, Nick, 2010 Volvo S40. 130,000 miles on it. After filling the car with gas, it doesn't always start. It cranks. I give it a minute, and then it starts. I think maybe the gas cap is original. There's a little typo here. It does not always tighten, the gas cap. Could that be the issue?
Well, the gas cap itself, no, but I wonder if we have something like with a fuel sender or fuel pressure sensor. Obviously, just putting gasoline in the vehicle shouldn't prevent it from starting. So there's something that's being misread. The car doesn't like it, so it's not starting. You give it a moment, it resets, and it fires right up. So I would, you know, just like the last caller, make note of that. Take it to the shop. They might have to go to the gas station themselves and put some gas in to try to experience it. You know, we'll do about anything we need to do within reason to try to experience the concern the customer has so we can duplicate it. Once we can duplicate it, we're much more likely to figure out what's going on and fix it.
And I understand this text. The listener is kind of confused about our talk about transmission fluid as for car care. I've heard, Texter says, from various sources that transmission fluid should be replaced at various times. Product literature with new cars also differ. Some say 15,000, then every 30,000. Others say it should be good for 100,000. Which is recommended? Is that going to be in your manual?
Yeah, it's, you know, each make and model is going to be a little bit different. So I would check the owner's manual, look online, check with the manufacturer, try to get a schedule. And, you know, most importantly, you follow a routine and follow a schedule. The varying in time frame is important. Obviously, if it's 15,000, 100,000 miles, that's a huge difference. But if it's 15 or 30, it's not a big enough of a difference. I'd be too worried. But check with your owner's manual. Maybe check with the dealership. Find the schedule for your vehicle and try to follow it the best you can.
You have to help me with this one. Texter wants to know, how effective do you think is Honda tape to prevent critters from chewing up the wires in the car's engine bay? Have you heard of such a thing?
Yeah, they made some tape that tasted bad to the critters, I guess, and they had little logos on it even. And I don't know, you know, obviously we're you know, as you've mentioned in the past, the critters start finding their way come midsummer, but you know, usually come fall we'll see that kind of stuff. And just keeping your garage clear of any of the feeding stuff, you know, don't park right up against the tree. Try to do the things you can to keep away from the critters. You keep away from the critters or maybe they'll keep away from your car.
All right. And they can do some damage for sure. Texter asked this, 2017 GMC Sierra, the right rear turn signal starts normally and then goes to hyper flash. What's going on there?
Likely the filament in the bulb is worn, so as it heats up, as it heats up, the amount of current that's flowing through it changes, so it's going to flash faster. It's all based off resistance. So if the resistance changes, which it does when it warms up because it's on, it might cause it to flash faster. So it's telling you that the bulb is on its way out.
All right, on my drive home, Texter says, on Thursday, my malfunction indicator light came on. On Friday morning, I called the car dealership to set up a diagnostic. 3+ weeks to get a diagnosis create a greater risk of things going downhill and causing bigger issues. I guess they just want you to share your thoughts because you guys are busy and you take appointments as they come in.
We do, and we talk about that almost, especially this time of the year. A lot of folks are getting ready for the road trip. We have kids coming home from college. Shops are busy. It's 90 degrees out. We want the air conditioning working. So we get through as many as we possibly can in a day. That being said, get on somebody's schedule. If you're going somewhere soon, if you're planning a road trip, because the longer you wait, the harder it's going to be to get into their schedule. You know, I'm sure we're a week or a week and a half out, and it, you know, we try not to get any more than that, but there's at some point a capacity too. So if you have a problem with your vehicle, make that appointment sooner than later.
I think we have time maybe for one more text. This texter needs front and rear sway bars. I want you to tell me what those are. In fact, they say, what are they, and can this fix wait? It's a 2008 Honda Pilot. It's got 200,000 miles on it.
So the stabilizer bar goes across the vehicle, and they're mounted to the subframe with bushings in the center. Each end, there's a link. And essentially, if you're going around the clover leaf and the vehicle really has that, you know, that weighing sensation, the stabilizer bar pushes down on that link. The link transfers the weight across the vehicle to keep it stable. So if those links go bad, the vehicle can feel unstable. Not that you're going to have a dangerous situation, but it definitely helps with the ride of the vehicle and the comfort, especially in a situation where you need to kind of maneuver quickly.
What do you tell folks who need some help from Lloyd's and you kind of backed up a little bit?
We somehow figure it out.
You do. Very accommodating.
We try really hard. Well, that's the name of the game. You got to give good customer service, and we do the best that we can.
So if people need that customer service at Lloyd's or one of your other shops, how do we find you again, Nick?
Yes, sir. So if you need an appointment or have a question, we will always help you. You can reach us at 651-228-1316. If you're in St. Paul, you'll find us on the corner of Grand and Chatsworth in St. Paul. For all that information and more, check out our website, which is lloydsautomotive.net.
It is so good to see you in studio. Kind of a good, great last effort here on my last show on CCO. Thanks for coming in, Nick.
Well, thanks for having me, and thank you for all the years. You know, I always think about the first time I did it at the fair and the sweat dripping, and I was saying every other word, and you've helped me throughout the years. I appreciate you.
Well, you've helped us and our listeners out quite so much as well, and we appreciate that. Nick, thank you. I know I'll see you down the road. Thanks. Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive. Now, Ted Farrell's Wine Chat is straight ahead, and then in the 8 o'clock hour, our Smart Garden Show continues. Julie Wisenhorn and John Trapp are going to be in studio as well. So somebody let them in, will you please? So they can get in. We'll be back with more. 830-WCCO. Stay with us, please.
The following part of our Saturday morning programming is a service of Haskell's. All opinions and statements expressed are solely those of Haskell's Wine and Spirits or their guests. Now, alongside the wine guru himself, Ted Farrell, here's Denny Law.
Goes that theme song. You know what that means? That means it's time for a wine chat with our friend Ted Farrell from Haskell's, who just happens to be in studio. This is a surprise. Now, people are walking in. I totally did not expect this. In fact, I was initially going to be home in my PJs.
But me too.
Yeah, me you too. Too. But you were talked into coming in here this morning. It's great to see you, Ted.
Well, it's official. Call the dog catcher because look what the dog just dragged in.
Great to see you. What did you bring with you?
Well, I brought little bubbles to celebrate your triumphant, you know, departure to moving on to the greater and better things. And it's a little Bouillot Cremant de Bourgogne, and we've talked about sparkling wine in the past, about the different styles and the different methods. And, you know, the king of all the sparkling wines is of obviously Champagne. And Champagne is a special region, and the French have been writing that into their treaties for since World War I about what can and cannot be called Champagne. And then they have all kinds of rules governing the sparkling wines throughout the rest of the country. And so this one is a Cremant de Bourgogne, which means it's a sparkling wine from the region of Burgundy. And the nice thing about this is as close as you can get to Champagne without paying the Champagne prices, because the two great varietals they use in this are either Pinot Noir or Chardonnay. And this particular one is done in the traditional method, in which the wine, first of all, you crush the grapes and it turns into a wine. Then they actually add sugars and yeast inside the bottle to the wine.
The bottle?
In the bottle. And then they allow it to ferment naturally. And then after a while, you know, you get a little spuzz at the end of the bottle with all that sugars and yeast at the end. They disgorge that, which is they kind of freeze the tip. That stuff kind of shoots out. They cap it off with what they call a dosage, which is a little bit more wine. And then they put the actual cork in there, seal it up. Same way the Champenois do it. Now, the other people in France can do it different ways, but this is the traditional method. There's another method called Charmant, where they have a big vat in which they put the sugars and yeast into, and it ferments, and then they bottle it. Then there's a few other ways. They call it the soda pop method, which you'll want to avoid, is where they just charge wine with CO2. That might be your cold ducks and all that kind of stuff that got all those hangovers on bad celebrations. But this one in particular, we thought we'd bring in to celebrate and launch you off on your retirement. So it's a wonderful wine made by my friends at it's Louis Bouillot, made by the Boisset family. The fellow who made this, Marcier, he met his wife because he opened up a bottle. He's a classic. He was from Champagne. He met his wife because he opened up a bottle. The cork shot across the room, hit this woman in the head. He went to apologize, and 6 months later, they were married.
Hey, he did it. All right.
So a little toast to you, sir, in all the years of, you know, talking it up and chatting up, putting up with myself, my father, for all these years. There's a special spot in heaven for you, my friend, because dealing with ferals for that long, there's a... Cheers. There's a special spot for someone who has to put up with ferals and all their hot wind and talking for minutes.
It has been a lot of fun, not only with you, Ted, but certainly your father after all those years, and sitting over there while Charlie and your dad would talk for so many years as well. It's been a great ride, and thank you for this. Thank you for, and I'm thinking of the old Spanish salute, which is, I was a Spanish major at the U 100 years ago, and if I can recall, I won't say it in the language, but it says health, money, and love, and time to enjoy it all.
Cheers.
To you.
To you, my friend. To you.
All right. I haven't had my coffee yet, so this is perfect.
Well, as they say, we said it in the green room, if you don't start drinking in the morning, you can't drink all day. So
that's right.
Here we are. Don't tell the FCC that we're boosting it up on here.
Hey, what are they going to do, fire me? Right? I was going to ask you, you talk about, and you mentioned it before, that only certain things can be named champagne. Has anybody ever brought lawsuits or gone to jail for not following that law?
Well, the bigger hook is you can't export it or send it into France. They'll put their foot down on that. And then a lot of people, just through mutual respect, Californians per se, there's one house that kind of is grandfathered in that can sneak the word on there on their bottle, but they have to put it in on the backside because they've been doing it for so long. But the other hook is, so if the Californians start dividing up their areas and calling things Rutherford and Oakville and all that type of thing, so they started playing ball because they realized, you know, it started with Fred Franzia. He had a wine called, I think it was Napa Look or Napa something. None of the grapes came from Napa, and all those guys in Napa spending millions of dollars to buy acres were getting upset over that, so they started a fight. And so now you're seeing AVV, the American Viticultural Area, AVA, sorry, where people are defining where the wines come from. And so you can put that on the label, so it's a little bit, you know, proof of better location. And the last thing you want to do is have somebody put on Napa Valley and they're growing the grapes like down in Modesto or something like that. So they will play ball. So it's now more of a mutual thing that you're seeing. The French will, if you do put the word champagne on it and try to send a cargo over it, they will refuse it and send it back. So you do have to play a little ball that way.
I guess you do. I don't want to take you away from your notes, but I was noticing that, looking at some of my notes from maybe it was 3 weeks ago, that it was the anniversary of Robert Mondavi's death. And what is the story on Robert Mondavi? Was there a Minnesota connection, right?
There is a Minnesota connection, indeed. Mondavi family were a mining family. And so his father immigrated from Italy and moved up to the Iron Range, I believe in Hibbing. And so they were mining away. Well, Prohibition started, and the one thing about Prohibition, where it's a little bit of a misnomer, you were still allowed some drink. You know, they did have some rules and regulations, and I think for a family, you were allowed up to about, I think it was 90 liters of wine a year per family, but good luck going to find it because all the wineries are closed. But what you could do is you could get grapes and a brick of grapes and put them in your bathtub and kind of soak them and do that and make some wine. Well, all the Italians up there thought the wine was actually just terrible. Terrible, terrible. So what they did is they all pulled money up there in the range, and they set Robert Mondavi's father out to California because that's where the grapes are coming to see if he could source better and greater grapes. And so he was very, very smart in the sense of he realized Napa Valley was a lot better climate than Hibbing for most of the year. No offense, Hibbing, but you know what I'm talking about, from about October to about May. So he realized how sunny and wonderful it was. So eventually he sent forth and had his family come. So Bob Mondavi was a nice Minnesota boy, and his son Tim still has a cabin somewhere in the Great North Woods that he loves to come back for, you know, 3 or 4 months to enjoy that, see a little bit of family. And the greatest thing was, it was always kind of neat when we would be traveling around. There used to be this huge it's kind of like the Detroit Auto Show of the wine industry, called Vin Expo. And you name it, every player was there. There would hustle and bustle, and everybody was always agog over Mondavi. You know, he was royalty, so to speak. But it was also humbling because we'd be walking down the aisles. He'd drop everything. My boy's from Minnesota. Get in here. How are you fellas doing? And, you know, it's a, you know, proper trade show, but you're up in his booth and he's slapping your back and getting the pictures and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, pushing everybody, oh, you have an interview in 10 minutes, yeah, you wait, I'm talking to my friends from Minnesota. So it's a great connection, a great story.
I can't remember the name now, but is it, besides Mondavi, wasn't there another winemaker from Minnesota or this area?
Rosenblum.
Okay.
Ken Rosenblum was, you know, been a fantastic, makes Zinfandels, all kinds of wine. He was more of a Sonoma player. He, the backstory to that, he, I believe, played football at Highland Park in St. Paul. And Judge Rosenbaum was, they both were tackles, and they called them the Jewish bookends. But he went out and started making great wines all throughout the Sonoma, specializing in Zinfandel, but he did a few other things, some great little dessert wines and all that stuff. And it was, Kent Rosenblum. And so he's at, but there's a lot of Minnesota connections. You know, the Evansteads from Minnesota are up in Oregon. In the Willamette Valley, there's a lot of Minnesota connections.
Interesting.
Which one is it? Dave Reddy with Murphy Good. His father was a salesman here. Same thing, went out, realized how great the weather was, set up shop, and started Murphy Good Winery. And now his son's making the wines out there. And on their label, they even put a little Viking helmet on because they use the oak from Minnesota, but they call it their Viking cuvee.
Now, I know we're almost out of time here, Ted, and I know your dad used to say that he was kind of basically studying to be a pharmacist, but ended up being where he ended up. What about you? If you weren't doing this, what do you think you would have been doing?
Probably flipping pizzas someplace or doing, I don't know. I really don't know because it's been
you
in my
grew
blood
up since, I, you know, since day one.
Anytime you had some time off, whether it was Christmas, you had to help out with the Christmas rush, or the summer, if you weren't mowing his lawn, you were polishing his floors or stocking his beer cooler. I guess it might still be cheap labor. So, you know, that's just in your blood, and that's what you got to do. Otherwise, I have absolutely no clue what I'd be doing. I'm not very good at anything else.
What about, and I know I'd be remiss if I in the last 30 seconds or so to ask you, what's happening in Excelsior?
We're still kind of dragging away. A lot of it's up to the insurance company. Hopefully next week, knock on wood, the demolition of the bar side will happen. We did inventory of the store yesterday just to do that. But a lot of it is still, there's a lot of different entities. The Minnetonka Watershed, the historical people all have a say in it. But hopefully next wood we'll scrape it and then see which way is up and then start going with it from there. But everything's progressing at the pace of ketchup coming out of a bottle.
I bet. Well, you got a lot of friends here at CCO, and our listeners wish you well, for sure. And again, if you missed the Excelsior, but you got a lot of other locations.
You are correct. We have a lot of other locations to serve everyone's needs. We have a Haskell's in downtown Minneapolis with lots of free parking on the weekends. We have a Haskell's in Minnetonka right across from the Ridgedale Shopping Center. There's a Haskell's in Highland Village right on Ford Parkway. We have a Haskell's down in Lomans Plaza in Bloomington. We have a Haskell's in White Bear Lake if you're headed out east, or if you're even going further out east to the river, stop by Haskell's in Stillwater. If you're headed down south, there's a Haskell's in Faribault right off of 35. And if you're going up north, stop by the Haskell's in Plymouth right on Rockford Road, or swing by our super cellar up in Maple Grove, 20,000 square feet to take all your needs. And Denny, everyone at Haskell's would just love to say good luck. It's been a grand tour. We've toured wide country. We've run around the country together. We chatted together. Right. You're the best.
Ted, thank you so much. And here's to your late father as well. We miss him, too. Thank you, Ted Farrell from Haskell's. Now, get those lawn and garden questions ready, because Julie Weisenhorn is going to be with us. Not only Julie, but the turf guru. We call him the turf guru. He's the turf expert from the University of Minnesota, John Trappi. He will be with us next hour. So, in fact, we're already starting to get lawn and garden questions into our text line. 83 the high today. We dropped to 59 overnight tonight. There's a small chance of showers tomorrow. Otherwise, look for a partly sunny sky for your day outside tomorrow with a high of 82. Let's see, Monday, that looks pretty good too, 84. Now, we're going to be even warmer come Tuesday, Wednesday. We'll hit near 86 degrees. Right now, we have an east wind at 9. Let me have a little more of that champagne. Or can I call it champagne?
Sure, why not? We're American.
What are they going to do, fire me? Humidity 59%. It's overcast. And Denny Long here, my last day here at CCO, and there's a whole crowd of people I totally did not expect. We'll be back with more. News Talk 830 WCCO.